Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this evening I'll be revisiting this theme that a refrain that goes through the Satipatthana Sutta, which is letting go of greed and distress with reference to the world, because it's such a foundation for even being able to do the practice of Satipatthana or even Anapanasati. And I see that largely as it's generating a desire to be free from samsara. If you don't have a desire to be free from samsara, or if your desire isn't liberation from suffering, it's going to be very difficult to develop this sense of relinquishing greed and distress with reference to the world. So, a couple of readings along the lines of body contemplation, but also with the framework of developing a desire to be free from samsara. I'll start with just a short excerpt from Majjhima Nikaya Sutta 9, the Samaditti Sutta, Sariputta. And in the body contemplations, we've gone through charnel ground contemplations and 32 parts, elements, but there's also other angles such as recollections on human suffering in general. That's birth, aging, sickness, and death. Aging, sickness, and death being three of the Devadutas, the heavenly messengers. The fourth being the Samana. So here's Sariputta defining aging and death and then defining birth. And what is aging and death? What is the origin of aging and death? What is the cessation of aging and death? What is the way leading to the cessation of aging and death? The aging of beings and the various orders of beings, their old age, brokenness of teeth, grayness of hair, wrinkling of skin, decline of life, weakness of the faculties. This is called aging, the passing of beings out of the various orders of beings, their passing away, dissolution, disappearance, dying, completion of time, dissolution of the aggregates, laying down of the body. This is called death. So this aging and this death are what is called aging and death. With the arising of birth, there is the arising of aging and death. With the cessation of birth, there is the cessation of aging and death. The way leading to the cessation of aging and death is just this Noble Eightfold Path. When a noble disciple has thus understood aging and death, the origin of aging and death, the cessation of aging and death, and the way leading to the cessation of aging and death, the here and now makes an end of suffering. In that way, too, a noble disciple is one of right view and has arrived at this true Dhamma. When, friends, a noble disciple understands birth, the origin of birth, the cessation of birth, and the way leading to the cessation of birth, in that way he is one of right view and has arrived at this true Dhamma. And what is birth? What is the origin of birth? What is the cessation of birth? What is the way leading to the cessation of birth? The birth of beings and the various orders of beings, their coming to birth, precipitation in a womb, generation, manifestation of the aggregates, obtaining of the bases for contact. This is called birth. With the arising of becoming, there is the arising of birth. With the cessation of becoming, there is the cessation of birth. The way leading to the cessation of birth is just this Noble Eightfold Path, that is, right view and so on to right concentration. So now I'll be reading from Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand. It's Pabongka Rinpoche, 24-day teaching given in the early 1900s in Tibet, a very famous teaching, and I found his teachings on developing dispassion for suffering were very compatible with these teachings in the Thai forest tradition. So I'll see how far I get with this. You must want to be without the cause of suffering if you are to work hard at the means to be free of the disease of suffering. To develop this wish, you must investigate the causes of suffering. And for this to happen, you must understand how you are tormented by suffering. Tsongkhapa said, "If one does not think hard about the true drawbacks of suffering, one will not develop any yearning for liberation. If one does not think of the source, the gateway to samsara, one cannot know proper cutting of the root of samsara. Be moved to renounce this existence, weary of it, and cherish the knowledge of what binds one to samsara." Thinking about the suffering of birth. If the sufferings of the lower realms, previously described sufferings in the lower realms, the hell realms and the hungry ghost realms, you might think, aren't the sufferings of gods and humans small? But when you are born in samsara, even gaining a higher rebirth is nothing but suffering. We have been reborn as humans, but if we ignore the fact that we can derive great benefit through practicing Dhamma, we will suffer as enormously as the rest. Owing to the trauma of being born from a womb, we have completely forgotten about the way we have already undergone the sufferings of birth. If we manage to take a human rebirth again, we must again experience all the sufferings of birth, although we do not remember them now. After you enter the mother's womb, and until you are born in the outside world, you have each of the sufferings associated with both of the five stages of development in the womb and the periods when each part of the body develops. First, when your consciousness is placed in the center of your parents' drops of blood and sperm, your body is only like a speck of yogurt, and when your consciousness enters it, the suffering is like being boiled in a giant hell cauldron. When the head and the swellings for the limbs appear, you suffer as if you were being stretched out on the rack. Each limb adds only more suffering. When your mother drinks something hot, when she moves, sleeps, and so on, you suffer as if you were being boiled in a hot spring, carried off by the wind, or crushed under a huge mountain. As Chanjograman's letter to a disciple says, "Enclosed, naked, in a most intolerable stench, you live enveloped in pitch blackness. After entering this hellish place, the womb, you must endure you must endure great suffering with your body all hunched up." That matches something Lungpa Rinick said when he was giving a teaching at Wat Nanachat. He said, "If anybody here wants to be reborn, just imagine tying yourself up in a gunny sack and hanging yourself in a tree for 9 months and come tell me you want to be reborn again." In other words, imagine you are placed in an iron pot filled with various kinds of filth and the lid is put on. There is no way you could stay in it even for a day, yet you have had to stay in your mother's womb, in its smelly filth and its black darkness for 9 months, 10 days. You then develop five attitudes concerning the nauseating aspects of the womb's interior that make you want to emerge. Yet even as you are being pushed through the cervix, as the letter to a disciple says, you are gradually squeezed as hard as one crushes sesame. Then, somehow, you are born. In other words, the suffering is like having your body squeezed in a vise. When you emerge, your skin is like raw, flayed cowhide. And when you are placed on a cushion, no matter how soft, it's like being thrown on a bramble patch. When you feel an outside wind, it's like being penetrated by a sword. When your mother takes you in her arms and carries you, it's like a sparrow being carried off by a hawk. These things terrify you. All your learning from past lives is veiled, and you have absolutely no wisdom at all. You even have to learn from scratch how to eat, sleep, walk, and sit. When you meditate on your birth from the womb, it should not be like goggling at someone else at an entertainment. You should meditate to develop insight into how you yourself are certain to have such a birth again, and into what it would be like. You should think about the sufferings you should think about these sufferings. Some may think that the sufferings of birth do no harm because the experience is over, but until we set a future limit on samsara, we must experience the suffering of birth an infinite number of times. Any questions before going on to the suffering of aging? Quite eloquent.
The letting go of the greed for the world is obvious. What about the distress?
Well, the distress is coming up. That's more. Aging is distressing.
Yeah. I was wondering, are there any, you mentioned that there are some type of course teachers that talked about birth. Can you share some of the other kind of perspectives on birth that would be similar to this?
The only one I remember is that one from Lungpa Rinnick, they're all similar to this. Like, do you want to be back in there? Da 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 da.
Yeah. I heard a senior Thai monk talking about this, and he mentioned that actually the sense of self died not too long after birth. Like when you were born, you were kind of scared, like blind and everything. But when they clean you up and start to feed you and you feel comfortable, that's when the sense of self started. This is me. I am important.
Yeah, also there was a study done that, I forget what the study was, but they were able to prove that for almost all people, it's maybe across the board in the study anyway, that birth is the single most traumatic event in a human life, even like more traumatic than if you've been in war or seen people killed.
I think I mentioned this before, but yeah, Stanislav Grof is one of the most famous psychologists, and he's done lots of alternative sort of therapies and found that, the vast majority of like psychopathologies that we try to treat today are rooted in some traumatic birth experience, even if it was a healthy birth experience. We're reliving birth, like the pain of our birth experience, every time we feel an unpleasant Vedana or something like that.
Yeah, and I also heard in a teaching Lungpa Plien gave he also said something just like in here, that because of the trauma of our previous death and our birth, that's why most people can't remember past lives, is because it's so traumatic that the mind actually has a automatic feature where it's keeps us from remembering it. Okay, the suffering of aging. Age makes a beautiful body ugly. Age takes radiance. Age takes strength. Age takes happiness. Age humiliates. Age kills, and age robs the complexion. In other words, the sufferings of aging are: one's handsome body deteriorates, one's strength declines, one's faculties decline, one's enjoyment of objects of the senses declines, and one's lifespan declines, and so on. Your sense faculties, wisdom, etc., gradually dim. Your body gets bent like a bow. Your complexion declines. It is difficult for you to sit down and get up. Your hair whitens. You have many wrinkles. You become as ugly as one already departed. Get ready for this. This isn't necessarily talking about any individual, but what Miller Ape is about to say is... it's quite heavy. So. Okay. This is a song of Milarepa on aging. One, you will get up like someone tethered to a stake. Two, you will walk as if stalking birds. Three, you will sit like a crumbling clod of earth. When the time comes for you, grandmother, to have all three, the decay of the body, that mirage will depress you. One, outside your skin creases into many wrinkles. Two, inside your flesh and blood thin out so bones protrude. Three, between these you're dull, stupid, deaf, blind, and senile. When the time comes for you, grandmother, to have all three, you will look ugly, wrinkled, and wrathful. All these things are defects of being in samsara. Kadampa Geshe Kamaba said, "How good that old age comes bit by bit. It would be impossible to take it if it came on all at once." In other words, if a healthy young man in his prime went to sleep tonight and woke up tomorrow with unclear faculties, with a bent and ancient body, and so on, it would be impossible for him to bear. You must practice the Dhamma now before your faculties, wisdom, and body decline. Later, when the sufferings of old age dominate you and you are about to leave your human body, your physical condition will have changed, your faculties will have declined, and you will not even be able to get up or sit down. How could you practice the Dhamma then? In another verse, it is as if the old received initiation water on their heads. Their hair is conch shell white, but not because it's pure of filth. It's been spat on by the Lord of Death and has taken on a frosty look. Wrinkles crisscross their foreheads. This is not from baby fat. Time's messengers made these tally marks to count the many years gone from their lives. Drops of mucus dribble from their noses. These do not look like necklaces of pearls. Their young, their carefree times are glaciers melting in the sun. Their rows of teeth have fallen out, but no replacement teeth await to grow. They have eaten all this life's food, so their cutlery has been confiscated. Their drawn faces and poor color are not because they're wearing monkey masks. Their loan of youth has been called, and now their true colors show. Their heads are nodding, but not because they're snickering at others. Yama prods them with his club's tip, and they can't help shaking their heads. Their faces look down, bent towards the road, but they're not searching for lost needles. Their memory and jewels of youth have spilt on the ground, hence the posture. They use all four limbs when they get up, but not because they're pretending they're cows. Their legs cannot support their bodies, so their hands have to assist. They sit down with a thud, but not because they're furious with a friend. The rope of health and sling of mental happiness are now severed. When they walk, they sway and lurch, but not because they're walking like a lord. They're under a great burden from their age, and the weight has upset their sense of balance. Their hands clutch at things and tremble, but they're not scooping up some gambling wins. They're afraid that Yama will steal everything in their reach. They're eating very little food and drink is not because they're stingy with their meals. The fire in their bellies has declined, so old people fear they may faint. They wear only thin, light clothes, but don't so dress to go out dancing. They have lost their inner body strength, and even clothes have become a burden. They wheeze and puff for breath, but are not blowing mantras like a lama. The gurgling sound they're making when they breathe foretells their disappearance into thin air. Everything that they do isn't just the act of a fool. The evil spirit of old age has captured them, and they aren't free to do as they would wish. They forget to do all their work, but not because they're shallow or don't care. Their faculties have declined, dimming their memories and minds. In other words, these wrinkles and white hairs are omens that they will be killed by Yama. And there are yet more sufferings, mental anguish, the fear of death, and so on. Then he goes into a short section on the suffering of illness, but I think I'll leave it there for...
You get the picture.
We're so good at the visuals.
So letting go of green distress with reference to the world. I don't know why, but whenever I read that, the body being like a speck of yogurt floating in a hell cauldron, I always got this image of just me being this kind of speck of yogurt.
I know, consciousness is not self. The idea that you only really have your Dhamma on your deathbed, does that, when they talk about the loss and becoming senile as a practitioner, as a meditation practitioner, does that also translate to the faculty of your mind, or is it state of aging?
That's really interesting in the sense that because definitely your faculties diminish, and it depends on different people, but Ajahn Chah is a very good example of somebody highly accomplished. But old age and approaching death, then he had a series of a degenerative brain condition, and his ability to use his limbs, articulate his speech, everything was compromised, but still, there was something peaceful and radiant about him. It was really interesting. It's not, well, it wasn't really tangible. I remember it was the year 2000, and there's a very highly regarded Cambodian monk, a very good practitioner, and then he jumped in to help the Cambodian people after the kind of Holocaust in Cambodia. He became the supreme patriarch and kind of the leader of all of the disparate communities around the world of Cambodian people, the diaspora. And then as he got toward the, probably would be in his late 70s, early 80s, and then dementia, Alzheimer's kicking in, his ability to navigate the world was very much compromised, but his presence was really extremely radiant, beautiful. So I remember, because we were looking after him, he was at, and I don't know why his community, they let him travel on his own from the East Coast, and really he couldn't make it from the meditation hall down to where his dwelling was. And it might have also been just because it's all unfamiliar, and that's, which is part of, because it's part of the confusion of senility and dementia. So we were, there was a group of us from here when we were looking after him and taking turns, making sure he was cared for, and then His Holiness the Dalai Lama was there. They came together at the end, the two of them together at the end, and His Holiness was just so, they've known each other for a long time. Of course, they both have quite similar stories of their, what's happened to their people. And see them meeting and the kind of, there wasn't any real need for, say, intelligent conversation, comparing philosophies or anything. Just this real heart meeting of real beauty. And I remember thinking, boy, that's, when I'm sitting in my wheelchair drooling, I want to look like that. Yes.
Namayam Dhammakataya Sadhu Kala.